content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Anna Dean Silver from the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Out in the Garden. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the book called The First Time Gardener, Growing Vegetables by Jessica Sowards. And we had left off last podcast on the basic needs of soil. And chapter two, the next chapter, which is the foundation. And we will continue where we left off in drainage not too wet. Choose a well-draining area where water does not routinely pool up for your garden. Heavy, compacted clay is very difficult to grow in because it does not drain. To increase drainage in heavy clay soil, add organic matter. Layering compost, peat moss, or aged manure on top of clay soil, and then mulching on top of that, more on mulch later, will allow the soil to become more aerated, therefore draining more. Mixing perlite into heavy soil also aids in aeration. Perlite looks like little bits of foam packing material, though it is a naturally occurring mineral. It can be purchased in bags anywhere potting soil is sold. Perlite does not hold water, but provides sharp drainage. Amendments will help the first year, but if they are repeated over the course of multiple seasons, they can completely transform soils. Containers need drainage to avoid water collection in them. If you notice your containers are collecting water, simply add more holes in the bottom. Raised beds are the most immediate solution to poor drainage and are a great option for growing in an area that receives a lot of precipitation or on a lot that doesn't drain well. Moisture, not too dry. Most people understand that a garden needs water, but we should aim to hydrate our soil rather than just our plants. When soil is baked in the sun and allowed to become incredibly dry, it becomes somewhat water repellent, losing its ability to take in water at all. The life in the soil cannot be sustained without water, and eventually it becomes dusty, void, and incapable of supporting growth. Place your garden in an area that it will be, for the most part, level. Gardening on a steep incline will require some extra effort. Because water drains so quickly from inclines, the soil becomes weak and dry and eventually erodes. Choose a level area or add terracing or barriers to level an incline. This will allow the water to stay in your garden long enough to really penetrate the soil. If you live in an area that is very hot and dry, or you are growing in soil that is very sandy and drains too quickly, maintaining proper moisture can be a struggle. Adding organic matter, like compost, helps soil retain moisture. Adding material like sphagnum moss which is used specifically to hold moisture, can buy you time between waterings. In very hot climates, consider watering the garden in the evening, at dusk, or even after dark. This will cut down on evaporation from the surface of the soil, allowing more water to be absorbed. Last, to maintain moisture, mulch. Covering your soil protects it from overdrying. And the next topic is organic material or food. Living things need sustenance to survive. When you start gardening, you will find a huge array of fertilizers and soil amendments marketed to make your plants grow fast and your fruits grow big. They may even work, but if you set out just to feed your plants, you will always have to feed your plants. If you set out to feed your soil will become healthier and healthier. It will feed your plants, and they will grow well and produce good fruit. This is the sustainable approach to gardening. Once your garden is established and your plants are growing, you may decide to give them a boost with purchased fertilizer product. There are many organic fertilizers available. If you decide to use one, always follow the instructions. We have a tendency to think more is better, and that is not the case with fertilizers. Over-fertilizing can kill plants or stunt their ability to absorb nutrients. No bag of fertilizer will make up for unhealthy, depleted soil. In nature, soil is amended with organic matter. Decomposing leaves, rotting logs, the droppings of animals, carrion, feathers, and a countless number of other natural covering sources of nitrogen, phosphorus, potassium, calcium, magnesium, and sulfur. In our created domestic gardens, we rake the leaves, pick up the sticks, clear the debris, pick the food before it falls to the ground to rot, and tear dying plants down. Dying plants out at the end of the season and carry them away from the soil that sustained them. We use the soil and take away everything that would in nature cycle through to replenish it. As gardeners, if we are going to use soil to grow our domesticated plants, we must be committed to adding natural organic matter back to the soil so the underground neighborhood can thrive. Maintaining a balance of giving back what you take is foundational for soil health. After each season, spread organic matter along the surface of your freshly weeded and cleared garden. You can gently incorporate it at the surface of the soil. There's no need to till it in. And before we do the next topic here, they has a little blurb that's organic matter soil amendments. Composted branches, leaves, yard waste, and kitchen scraps. Aged mature. Never put a coconut core, worm castings, blood meal, and bone meal. And for the age manure, it says never put fresh manure on your garden, as the nitrogen hasn't been composted and will burn your plants. The exceptions are rabbit and alpaca manures, which are both called cold manures, and are safe for immediate application. Never put dog or cat waste on your garden. All right. And our next topic here is covering. We're still in the soil portion, the basic needs of soil. And here is this subtopic is covering. Bare soil is not a natural occurrence. If you consider nature, soil is very rarely left exposed. It is either covered in some form of vegetation or with the mulchy debris of vegetation that has died and fallen to the ground. Now consider the exception to this rule. The places where you see expanses of bare ground in nature are deserts. They are places that cannot sustain lush vegetation at all. Soil needs to be covered to maintain moisture, temperature, structure, and sustenance. It needs to be covered to maintain life. All of the points we have discussed regarding the needs of soil are aided by mulching, which includes the following benefits. Lessens weeding. I've heard it said before that Mother Earth is modest and doesn't like to be left naked. I love this analogy, and it doesn't take long for a new gardener to learn just how true it is. Cover the earth with mulch or plants of your choosing, or she will cover herself with weeds. Mulching prevents the spread and germination of weed seeds by keeping them in the dark. It also makes the weeds that do manage to germinate much easier to pull by keeping the soil light and fluffy. Maintains moisture. Covered soil doesn't grow out as quickly. This is due to the mulch actually holding moisture in itself and also protecting the soil from evaporation that occurs from direct exposure to sunlight. Surprisingly, though, over time, mulching will minimize flooding by allowing the soil to become naturally structured and less compact. Because mulching benefits the life in the soil's ecosystem, those living things are encouraged to build their neighborhood in an environment that is protected from the harsh elements. They produce natural airways and add organic matter to the soil. Adds nutrition. Any organic materials added to your garden as mulch will break down over time and add to the health of your soil. Again, covering encourages a healthy ecosystem of living organisms like earthworms, which will break down soil, aerating and enriching it. And our next topic is materials for mulching. What you need to use to mulch your garden will likely be influenced by your region, budget, and the availability of materials. Here are some common options used to cover garden soil. Wood chips. There are entire gardening methods developed around mulching with wood chips. Wood chips are often an economical choice because they can be obtained for free from tree services that will dump a pile of freshly shredded trees at your house. They take at least a season to break down to the point of being usable and are very labor-intensive to move into place. They do add a tremendous amount of nitrogen to the soil as they deteriorate and provide a very solid covering, but should be used with awareness and education. Putting wood chips on the garden before they are broken down, especially mixing them into the soil, can cause severe imbalances in the soil and cause plants to suffer. Leaf mulch. Fallen leaves can be raked into compost piles in the fall and used to mulch the garden in the spring. They are best used as mulch once they have begun to break down or once they have been shredded. When used whole and freshly fallen, they can provide too much of a barrier, blocking the soil from receiving the moisture it needs. They have the benefit of adding nutrients to the soil as they decompose. Compost. Compost is a fantastic covering for the organic garden. Spreading a 2 to 3 inch layer of compost will help build soil structure, hold moisture, and feed the soil with organic nutrients. Because compost can be loose, you may want to add a thin layer of straw or wood chips on top of the compost for weed suppression. Compost can be made at home or purchased. Straw. Straw is the byproduct of processing cereal grains like barley, rye, or wheat. Removing the grain and chaff leaves behind the hollow stalks of the grain stem, the straw. Straw is typically sold as animal bedding because it has no nutritional value. Mulching with straw doesn't add much organic material back to the garden, making it a good option to mulch on top of compost or with some other organic matter. It's slower to break down and is a fantastic insulator. Due to its hollow nature, it helps protect the soil from temperature extremes and is a good option for fall and winter gardening or gardening in very warm climates. Hay. A thick layer of hay mulch can do a lot for a garden. Hay is a grass, legume, or other herbaceous plant that has been cut and dried for animal fodder. Not to be mistaken for hollow straw, hay is a whole plant and adds a lot of nutrition to your soil as it breaks down. It will compact quicker and break down faster than straw. The downside of hay is that it often has a lot of grass seeds in it. This means that it may bring weeds into the garden, though hay will be very shallowly rooted, and it is easy to pull as it grows in the mulch, not the soil. Hay is a good option for very dry areas as it holds a lot of water. Woven ground cover. This specialty garden product can be found anywhere greenhouses and greenhouse supplies are sold. It is a woven material that is rolled out over the prepared soil and fastened with yard stakes. It is water permeable but blocks the light and therefore suppresses weeds. Holes can be measured and cut in whatever spacing is necessary for the crop being grown. Note, woven ground cover is popular among market growers and in some situations can be a worthy investment. It is expensive, however, and weeds will grow through the holes. It does not lend to mixing up your garden layout. I use this product and I do like it, but I wouldn't suggest it for a brand new gardener. And the next topic is what not to use for mulch. There are some mulch products available for purchase that are not intended for vegetable gardens. Rubber. Rubber mulch, which is designed for playgrounds or commercial landscaping, is not a safe product to have at the base of your food plants. It is usually made of recycled tires and will leach toxic chemicals into the soil. Dyed wood. Dyed wood, often used in commercial landscaping, is coated to actually prevent breakdown, meaning it will do the opposite of what you want in your vegetable garden. It will leach possible contaminants into your garden soil, and because it won't break down, it can kill beneficial soil bacteria and the life in your soil. Our next topic is negotiable and non-negotiable. The points covered in this chapter are non-negotiable. Regulating soil health, maintaining proper moisture, providing even light, and covering your soil are truly vital to a healthy, productive garden. Beyond this, however, is room for expression. In the next chapter, we will explore different styles and approaches to growing our own food. And now we're at chapter 3, which is creating your garden. Remember that your first garden is a classroom as much as it is a place for your groceries to grow. Your first garden is going to teach you what to expect from plants and how to meet their needs. It will provide joy, excitement, and delicious food. That said, for your very first garden, lessen the likelihood of heartbreak by creating a manageable beginner garden. You will have your whole life to build massive gardens and take on the task of fully replacing your family's food needs with your green thumb. Take the slow and steady approach. Build a garden that won't overwhelm you. Many first-time gardeners make the mistake of excitedly creating huge gardens for their first year, only to find themselves giving up before the first harvest comes in. A small garden will provide you with plenty of lessons. Once you have had success on a smaller scale, use that confidence and knowledge to expand your growing efforts. And our next topic is choices. The basic needs of the garden discussed in Chapter 2 are non-negotiable. Once those bases are covered, you have some choices to make. Don't look for the right way. Instead, search for the best way for your circumstances, region, budget, time, availability, and physical needs. Be very honest with yourself in this decision-making process. What to grow? Having in mind what you'd like to grow may affect the size and style of garden you build. Grow what you and your family will eat, then add a few extras. If you're the only one in your house that eats salads, don't grow 10 heads of lettuce at once. If no one eats tomatoes, don't grow an entire bed full of them. Think of the things you currently purchase at the grocery store. Are you buying frozen green beans every week? Do you buy salad greens? Does your family love salsa? Are you routinely purchasing cantaloupe or watermelon? Give most of your garden space to things you know you'll use. Give a little bit of your space to trying something new. The flavor of radishes completely changes when they are roasted. Rutabagas, mashed with chives and sour cream, are literally life-changing. Beets can be hydrated to make a nutrient-dense powder to add to smoothies. All of these are lessons I learned from growing new things and figuring out how to use them. Easy crops for first-time gardeners is our next topic. These crops are forgiving, grow fast, and do generally well with a variety of conditions. Please don't limit yourself to this list. I have confidence that you can grow anything you decide to try as long as you're committed to process of learning. Even still, easy crops grow quick confidence as well as quick food. Consider the following list. To start, basil, beans, bush and pole, cherry tomatoes, cucumbers, jalapeno peppers, kale, radishes, Swiss chard, thyme, and zucchini. And our next topic is garden styles. And we will start that one next in our next podcast. So please, hope you'll join us. We've run out of time for today's episode of Out in the Garden. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Anna Dean Silver, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Out in the Garden is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. And thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service. And if there is a topic you would like us to talk about in Out in the Garden, please call that number as well and let us know. Thank you so much.